and welcome in to episode 60 of the Calcio Connection podcast. We are connecting with you, Italian football fans from all over the world. We have a weekend of results to break down, although my team Inter and Jerry's team Lazio are yet to debut this season. A note to our listeners, we're recording this before Milan's match here on Monday, so we're not going to talk about that result because we simply cannot see into the future. But on Saturday, you had Fiorentina, a 1-0 victory over Torino with Castrovilli scoring on an assist from Chiesa. You had Roma and Verona playing to a 0-0 draw. We'll get on more of that in a few minutes because it may not end up being a draw at the end of the day. It's a pretty wacky story there. On Sunday, you had Napoli 2-0 winners over Parma. We'll break that down with our guest on this episode. Genoa 4-1 winners over Crotone, and woof. Crotone is going to need to improve if they want to stay up this season, that's for sure. Sassuolo and Cagliari played to a 1-1 draw, and Juventus looked pretty impressive in a 3-0 victory against Sampdoria. So we have a lot to get into. Alex Dono alongside my co-host Jerry Mancini. So Jerry, you and I got to kick our feet up over the weekend. Inter and Lazio have not debuted yet, so we just got to enjoy the rest of the league. How are you feeling coming out of that first weekend in Serie A?
I'm happy we didn't lose. So I can walk away on the weekend not having any stress, not thinking about how my club may have lost the game in a last minute something, who knows. But yeah, it was nice to just sit back and be the spectator rather than be the person that has to stress for their club to win. A lot of things that we took away from this weekend, I thought Napoli was really good. We saw Victor Osimhen make his debut coming off the bench and proved a lot of people wrong. And he got a lot of, he earned a lot of respect yesterday. And myself watching Ligue 1, and I will say it as I said on my tweet yesterday, Ligue 1 has some of the best talent that you can find that will really help your squad and make them better. It's a very enjoyable league to watch. I personally like it. I think Osimhen's going to be probably one of the best players this season in Serie A. And in the second half, he really made a difference for them. And another thing, I was watching the Genoa game, and Mattia Destro, does this guy think he's like the best thing ever because he actually scored a goal and who knows how long? Like, the guy was celebrating as if he scored against Juventus. Seriously, settle down, buddy. Settle down. Settle down. It's Crotone, who I don't even know who the heck they have on their roster. Sorry about that. Any player that was in their lineup yesterday, I don't know anybody who started. I never heard any of those players. Not even an idea of what they can produce, what they're offer this season.
They're going right back to Serie B. I hate to say it, but I think that their game on Sunday is just a sign of a long season ahead for Crotone.
I agree with you. And you know what's sad? I thought their midfield and their forwards were able to generate at times some good plays, some set pieces. Like they were doing stuff, but their back line was just getting shredded. Just simple basic stuff that they weren't following and just out of position, playing too high, not reading the play, not seeing the guy anticipating the pass, the long passes. It was just a really big disaster in that back end. And if they don't fix that quickly, that can be their downfall for this season. But overall, it was an enjoyable weekend for Calcio.
It really was. And let's bring on our special guest. He's joined us before. He is the host and producer of the Forza Napoli pod. He's a good friend of Jerry and becoming a great friend of me as well here on Calcio Connection. Joe Fischetti joins us. So, Joe, let's start with Napoli. I thought Jerry hit the nail on the head. I enjoyed that performance from Osimhen, who really changed the game when he came on in the second half. It was an expensive signing, but I think will end up being a worthwhile signing for Napoli. And you also, Joe, to add to that, I thought you had a lot of insightful stuff on your Twitter timeline about Gattuso's tactics and really the way he adapted throughout that game. I was pretty impressed with that as well. So how are you feeling coming off of 3 points in Napoli's debut for this season?
Hey, guys. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on again. It's always a pleasure to chat with you guys. Feeling good. Glad that, it was a bit of a nervous first hour of that match and very slow. Nothing really happened. But we walked away with the 3 points, and we looked a lot better, like you guys mentioned, with Osimhen coming on. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, for Napoli supporters, we're not terribly surprised because we had the benefit of watching all of their friendly matches, albeit against some pretty weak squads from the Eccellenza and Serie D and Serie C. The best team we played was Pescara and Serie B. But we kind of got a glimpse through those friendlies of what Osimhen was capable of. Whereas, you know, the casual Serie A fan or fans of other clubs probably didn't watch those, just like I didn't watch Inter or Lazio's friendly matches before the season.
I got plenty to say about those a little bit later, but continue.
Yeah, and then, I mean, the other thing is Calcio criticizing the price that Napoli paid for Osimhen, but what a lot of people overlook is that they didn't pay 70 or 80 million in cash. They paid 50 million in cash and a couple of Primavera, I think four Primavera players with Karnetsis to Lille, so that, which was valued at about 20 million euros. So that 20 million euros plus 50 in cash is what makes up the 70 million euros. And then there's also about 10 million in bonuses, depending on how Napoli does. So it wasn't like they paid 70 million euros in cash. On Gattuso's tactics, this is something that I did tweet about and I've been talking about a little bit on the podcast as well, because you always hear people say that, you know, Gattuso's great for his grinta, but he just needs to work on his tactics. And I've been saying, you know what, maybe at the beginning that was the case and it kind of had to be to get this team straightened out. But he has shown a willingness to play different players, a willingness to try different formations. Again, in the friendlies, we got to see the 4-2-3-1. Which really works well because it stretches out the opponent's back line and you get to have Osimhen and Mertens on together. And Mertens might end up benefiting even more than Osimhen does from that formation, because what we saw with Osimhen is that he's not just really good at finishing, but he's also good at playing with his back to the goal and laying the ball off. And because of his pace, he creates a lot of space on the pitch. So again, for Napoli fans, it wasn't a huge surprise, but I can see why other fans were maybe a little bit impressed by that. But what Gattuso did was he started with a very familiar lineup and formation, which was a 4-3-3. And I mean, I was a little bit surprised that he went with Lozano up top instead of Politano. But then when he needed to, he made the adjustment because we needed to score and he brought Osimhen in. And then the part that actually surprised me more than anything was late in the match, he brought in Andrea Petagna and played him alongside Osimhen, which was, we were all thinking that Petagna is really going to be our third option striker. He'll probably play against the weaker clubs or in the Coppa Italia, but he actually brought them on, which was really, really impressive.
So something I'd love to get your insight on, and I want Jerry to weigh on in this as well. This whole saga between Roma and Napoli, and I'm not even really sure if you can involve Juventus in this anymore, because it seems like Juventus have moved on from Edin Dzeko and Alvaro Morata is about to return to Juve, because the saga that had been going on for a few weeks was the idea that Dzeko was on his way to Juventus, and in Dzeko leaving Roma, that would open the door for Milik to go to Roma, and of course Napoli would be very happy to sell him for a nice profit. Roma would be happy to make, you know, a plus Valenza on an aging player, even though I think Dzeko is really good and could still help Roma. They seem happy about the idea of moving on from him and bringing in a younger Milik. So that's been the whole triangle. Now you, Jerry, and me are on a text thread together, and we thought something fishy was going on a few days ago when, you know, Milik was getting his medicals done for Roma, and then there was a delay in announcing the deal, and that's usually what gets my radar up. That's kind of a weird thing when these delays happen, because usually once you're taking a medical, that means it's basically signed, sealed, and delivered. And so, you know, the major issue being reported here for Milik is that there's a financial hurdle between he and Napoli, in that, you know, we remember when the Napoli players early last season, still during the Ancelotti era, had that mutiny, and the players were all fined for that mutiny. And, you know, Milik still has an unpaid fine from that era, and he doesn't want to pay the fine to be released. And De Laurentiis does not want to let him go without paying that fine. So what this has done is it's held up the Dzeko deal, and now Morata seems to be on his way to Juve, so the door's no longer open for Dzeko, and maybe Milik ends up staying at Napoli and just, you know, sitting out the end of his contract on the bench. Have I adequately described the scenario, Joe, and what do you think the end game is here with Milik?
Yeah, I think you've described it accurately, at least as far as the rumors go in the media. I personally do not think this has anything to do with the fines, and I'll tell you why. So the fines that were issued by the club for the mutiny were a maximum of 1 year of salary. So 1 month of salary. So if Milik's making, say, 2.5 million euros a year, that works up to about 200,000 euros and change. Now, I know that De Laurentiis is very, very stubborn and he has a lot of pride. But if there's one thing that he may just value more than his pride, it's cash. And I just cannot see them wasting this opportunity to sell a player who can walk away for free at the end of this season for, I think the reports were 18 million euros plus up to, I think, 7 million euros in bonuses. I can't see him throwing away potentially 25, even 20 million euros because of a $200,000 fine. That just doesn't make sense to me. What I think is going on here is that there was an issue with his medicals. We know that Roma specifically made him go to Switzerland to do his medical instead of Rome. And there was a report, or Roma issued a official press release where they said it was very legal in nature, and you probably felt like it was written to make sure that they avoid any lawsuits, which seems to be a pretty common theme under the Friedkin Group.
It's because the Friedkin Group is American and we love our lawsuits in the United States. So they're probably being extra careful.
Exactly. And I don't blame them. But if you read that statement carefully, they're not saying that this transaction is falling apart because Milik had failed his medical. What they're saying is essentially a long-winded version of no comment. They're saying, we're not commenting about his medical one way or the other, because that wouldn't be the professional thing to do, especially about another team's player. So to me, reading between the lines, I think that's what's going on here, that they saw something in the medical that they didn't like. That's not to say they're not necessarily still interested in Milik, but there were reports that they wanted to go back to the negotiating table and they wanted to reduce the offer by 5 million euros. Again, this is all through the media, so I don't know what's true and what's not true, but I think that's probably what's going on here. I don't think it's about the fines.
What do you think the end game here is, Jerry? And honestly, if I look at it even from a Roma perspective, if the worst thing that can happen is they have to reintegrate Edin Dzeko into their squad, I mean, that might only end up helping them this season, because you know they couldn't bury any of their chances on Sunday or Saturday when they played, excuse me.
No, Joel says a good point that I'd even think about, that if it's a $200,000 fine, I don't think he would risk 20 million just for a $200,000 fine. It makes no sense. That's such a big difference, and it's a lot of money that ADL is just throwing out the window. Even if it's his own pride, I think that he's much smarter than that, and that he'll financially try to help his club in the best way possible. In terms of if this deal is going to happen, I don't think so personally. I think Joel's right again, and hit it on the money there, that there is probably medical issues with Milik that we don't know about. Who knows personally? Maybe he's not fit. Maybe something that Roma has seen and now are not sure about signing him. And I know that they wanted the discount, the 5 million, for taking so long for the deal to happen. And then, like you said too, Alex, they look like shit without Dzeko.
We're going to get to that in a minute. I want to break down that match, but yeah, continue.
Breakdown. What's there to break down with that match? It was a disaster. And I don't mean that. I'm not trying to hate as a Lazio fan here. I'm just saying there are a lot of issues in that game. Like, they just, I don't know, Mkhitaryan, is your number nine? Like, that's a scary thought, because he did not look really good as a number nine. I didn't like him. He didn't really convince me. Whereas I feel like with Dzeko in the lineup, he gives him a good physical presence up top. He gives them an identity that someone can score. He can lead the way up top. He just does a lot of things that was really missing in their game on Saturday. And credit to Verona, because they did lose a lot of players in the transfer market, but it doesn't look like it really has made an impact on their team. They continue to be that very defensive sounded club where they make it really hard for you to break them down and to score goals. And I feel that as the game wore on, Verona really got into the back of their heads and in their minds and made them think that they couldn't get by their defense. So, and they had a few good chances. They missed near the end. They hit the crossbar.
Yeah,
so,
that crack by DiMarco who hit the crossbar. I mean, that would have been a sensational goal. And you know, I can say the same about Spinazzola who hit the crossbar around the 85th minute for Roma. That would have been a sensational goal. And really the story of that match outside of, you know, Roma not being clinical enough, they had 21 shot attempts in that game and couldn't score. But the woodwork was hit three times, Jerry. I mean, Verona hit the woodwork twice. Roma hit the crossbar late in the match. So they, you know, both of those teams were literally inches away from scoring big goals.
Great shout out there, actually. Spinazzola actually was the best player for Roma. He was really like fast, active. He was creating chances. Like you said, he hit the woodwork. I thought he was their best player for Roma. And that deal where they made with Juventus has really paid off. And he has really stepped up for them. And I guess that's like they're saying, like they're trying to rebuild the club. I think that's a really important player. Other than Zaniolo, Spinazzola is another player that they should really consider building around as well and for the future.
So, and you know, I think we broke it down there enough, but here's another issue for Roma. Now, the match ended in a 0-0 draw, but it might end up costing Roma a point in a forfeit. So this is wild. Now, there is a precedent for this potential forfeit. It happened to Sassuolo back in 2016. So Roma risk actually losing that game despite playing to a 0-0 draw on the field because, according to Gazzetta, Diawara was still registered for Roma in the under-22 list of players and not in their main squad. Now, the problem is he's 23 years old, okay, and was therefore placed on the wrong squad list. So with him being illegally registered, if they follow this by the letter of the law, Serie A, what they should do and probably will do here is overturn the 0-0 result and turn it into officially a 3-0 victory for Verona, because that's the scoreline you go with when there's a forfeit. You give it 3-0 to the winning team in the forfeit. So, you know, this would be a huge boost to Verona. It would give them 3 points and a nice goal differential, you know, to start the season. It'd be really, really bad for Roma. And wow, and if it goes down this way, as it probably should, what a laughable way to start the Friedkin era. I'm not saying he's not going to end up being, you know, an improvement over the previous Pelota regime there, but, you know, to start with an underwhelming performance and then apparently a forfeit, that's a really rough start to the year for Roma. So, I mean, Joe, you're pretty good on these rules. Do you think the forfeit is going to happen, or is this maybe just the Italian press kind of grasping at straws here? Do you think we're really going to come out of this with Roma having to forfeit that draw?
Yeah, I think this could take a bit of time to play out, but they could be handed the loss. I think, I mean, the one difference with the precedent from the Sassuolo game from a couple years ago was that they had a player on the squad that wasn't registered at all. So it's slightly different than putting a player in the wrong list. And I think that, at least according to Roma press, that Roma would probably appeal the decision if they were handed a loss, because it's not, they would argue that this wasn't something they did intentionally to bypass the rules. There are very specific squad rules in terms of how many players you have to have on the team that are locally trained, that are club trained. There's limitations on non-European Union players. And there are some exceptions for youth players, which I think they define as being under 22. So that's the one that's at stake here. I have a feeling, to be honest, that Roma's not going to get the loss, though. I think they're going to walk away with this one kind of, it was an innocent mistake, and it'll end up being a 0-0 draw, in my opinion.
What do you think, Jerry?
How the fuck is this a mistake? I'm sorry, man. like, honest, when you go to the washroom and you do a number two, do you walk out and forget, oh, I forgot to use the toilet paper? Oh, it's a mistake. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. I'm sorry. this doesn't make sense. You got people who do this job day in, day out. they know the rules. They know what is expected of them. And I'm not just saying because Roma, like I said before, if you have rules in place, you should be disciplined for them. You don't follow them, those are the consequences. It doesn't matter any team, because if they get away with it, then you're going to start to hear, oh, Roma got away with this, and then you got this, and you got that. And it's like, oh, this team, they paid the referee, and they paid the league. And it's those are the rules. Don't make yourself look stupid. Do what you got to do, and set it straight. That's it, man. Like, I don't know how the heck you register a player wrong. And it's just, it's an embarrassment, I find. It's sad, but Joe might be right. They might get away with it, and they're going to deem it as a simple mistake or an error, like misjudgment. I think it's bullshit, but I think they should be disciplined for it. I don't care. That's just the way I look at it. And if it was Lazio, I would probably say the same. I would hate it, but I would be more disappointed in my club not knowing, like, how do you like, see the simple details? Like, how do you not know the ages of your players and what's going on? Like, these are, you hire people to do a job. They should be doing the job properly. It's not like they're getting paid to put milk up at a grocery store for $6 an hour or $15. These guys make a lot of money to make sure that these things are done in the right way possible. So that's the way I look at it.
That to me is the sort of clerical error that somebody probably loses a job for, right? Unless you directly pin that on someone very high up. Because if you directly pin that on someone very high up, they probably just get a slap at the wrist, because you're not going to fire your technical director over something like that. But if this was the responsibility of someone two or three levels down the chain of command, who really, you know, who deals more with the filing and the clerical stuff, this is the type of mistake that, if this could potentially cost you, you know, cost you 1 point and a draw, and take it down to a 3-0 loss, then yeah, somebody could honestly lose their shit over that completely. But I wanted to go over one more result from the weekend before we look ahead. So we had the coaching debut for Andrea Pirlo, who just earned his badge about a week ago presenting his thesis. Juve took the pitch at home against Sampdoria. Now, I'm not going to throw really any shade at Juve after that performance, but I will remind people that Samp are bad, okay? That Sampdoria might end up being a relegation threat. So spare me the cartwheels for a Juventus dominant performance. But with that said, they took care of business. Certainly no tactical issue whatsoever with what Andrea Pirlo threw out there. In fact, it reminded me a little bit of Conte's Juventus, you know, from, you know, 7-8 years ago. It really was eerily reminiscent of that. And, you know, we talked a little bit about Osimhen having a fantastic debut for Napoli. Juventus had a couple of great debuts. Dejan Kulishevsky, you know, who we'd seen before, of course, in this league, had a good year with Parma last year. But Kulu was unbelievable, scored the opening goal in the 13th minute. And another good debut, I tip my cap to Weston McKennie, you know, the American international who's been getting a lot of publicity because he's American, but he played really, really well in that game and nearly scored a goal himself. So, you know, for anyone out there who was either expecting or hoping that Juventus takes a big step backwards this year with an inexperienced coach, so far, so good. You're certainly not, that agenda did not gain any steam over the weekend. That was a fine debut by Pirlo, a superb debut in Juventus colors by Kulusevski, an excellent debut in Juve colors by Weston McKennie. You know, Cristiano Ronaldo did his usual Ronaldo stuff out there, which included, you know, a goal and some tantrums when he missed other opportunities to score. But a pretty straightforward win by Juve. Joe, what were your takes coming out of that match?
Yeah, I agree with most of what you said. I think you have to take it with a grain of salt because it was against Sampdoria, but you can't deny that Juventus played really, really well. It was funny because before the match started, on their official Twitter page, they posted their formation with a 5-4-1, and a lot of people were saying, what the hell is this? And thinking, yeah, Okay, we have a chance to beat Juve. But then when on the broadcast, it turned out to just be a 3-5-2. I agree that McKennie and Kulusevski were both really, really good. I know you guys have had Carlo Garganeza on the podcast a few times, and he spoke glowingly of McKinney's performance against Nevada in the friendly, and looks like that carried through. Kulusevski obviously scored the beautiful goal. And the other thing that I found really interesting, one thing we heard about Pirlo say before the match during spring summer training was that they want to play a high press and win back possession as quickly as they can after they lose it. And we saw that. And then for me, as a Napoli fan, what was most enjoyable was the fact that Juventus appeared to be better at playing Sarri ball without Sarri. It wasn't exactly Sarri ball, but they played really quick and they were making quick passes. The movement off the ball was really, really good. So, you know, it seemed like to play with the pace, at least that Sarri wanted them to play, all they actually had to do was get rid of Sarri himself.
Jerry, did you have the same takeaways coming out of that match?
Well, I didn't watch the whole game fully like probably you guys did. I caught pieces of it. I did catch Kulusevski's goal, which was pretty impressive. But you might be right that Sampdoria, it's not a good opponent, but not a game that you really want to look at Juventus to see where they're at. We know that Alvaro Morata is on his way back to his club. I still think that even though they looked very good yesterday, they need a number nine. You don't want to put too much into this game. I think down the latter part of the season, you're going to see that they might need that number nine, especially with injuries and playing on three fronts. And you don't want to just rely on Kulusevski up front. And I'm sorry if I'm butchering his name. But, I didn't think that Sampdoria were extremely bad. I think that they just responded too late into the game. I thought down the last quarter of the match, they started to wake up. They had a few, Quadiala. I can never pronounce his name right. It's, the hardest name for me, sorry. But I thought he had a good chance at the very end, and he just missed the net just wide. It's one game. I wouldn't put too much into it, but they did look very good in the parts of the game that I was able to catch.
Yeah, I think you actually sound like you nailed Quagliarella there. I think you actually got it. And you know, coming out of the weekend, I think, Jerry, a lot of what you and I had in our predictions for the season, I think were validated, at least for a couple of teams. You and I both higher on Napoli than a lot of people were. I saw, and again, it's one match, so I'm not going to completely overreact, but you know, a lot of folks in their trendy preseason picks had Napoli still out of the top four. You and I both had them in. You know, they end up pulling off a nice win, although not a great 90 minutes, but the big summer signing that they made, Osimhen, made a huge difference when he came on the pitch, and they ended up scoring two nice goals with a lot of his help. Both you and I do not rate Roma heading into the year, and I think our opinions on Roma, you know, not being a top four team, maybe even not being a top six team at this point, were validated. Now, differing from you, I actually had Juventus not enter as my preseason Scudetto pick. I'd like to be wrong about that, but so far Juve looks fine. We're yet to see Inter debut. I'm curious, Joe, because we haven't spoken to you in a while, who's your Scudetto pick? Who did you go with preseason?
So I had Juventus as well. I just felt that, you know, if Sarri can win the Scudetto playing the way Juventus played last year, then, you know, what a lot of people say is that anybody can win a Scudetto coaching that team because they have so much quality in the squad. Obviously, Pirlo was the big question mark, but for me, it was on everyone else to, you know, I want to see Juve lose one first before I start picking against them.
So before we wrap it up here, I want to get a couple of predictions from each of us on the upcoming matches for our clubs. Keep in mind, we'll be watching the debuts of, not against one another, but of Inter and Lazio this weekend. Joe, for your Napoli, they'll be playing their second match of the season. You know, we saw both Napoli and Genoa pick up wins over the weekend. Napoli and Genoa will square off in Naples this coming Sunday. So, Joe, how do you think that match is going to play out? And does Napoli get three more points?
Yeah, I think they do. I think not to take anything away from Genoa, because they played well, but like you guys mentioned, they played against Crotone, and I agree that Crotone is probably heading straight back to Serie B. So, you know, let's see how they do against a team like Napoli that has obviously a lot more experience, a lot more talent in the squad. What I'm curious to see is whether Gattuso goes straight to the 4-2-3-1 formation, or if he kind of uses the same tactics and starts out more conservative with the 4-3-3 and then transitions if the situation warrants it. But I think that has to be a 3 point. We have to take 3 points out of that match.
Fair enough. Jerry, for Lazio, season debut this coming Saturday. Going to be taking on Cagliari, who played Sassuolo to a 1-1 draw in their opening match. It's going to be in Sardinia, so Lazio will have to travel for this one. Not going to be a very hostile crowd with the 1,000 fans max rule in effect in Serie A. But, I mean, Jerry, how do you expect this to play out? And do you think Lazio is going to get 3 points in their debut?
I think that the preseason hasn't been the greatest. But that's because Inzaghi has really experimented a lot of different formations, different players in the lineup. He hasn't been using Luis Alberto and Sergei Milinkovic-Savic. They've been resting, not any serious injuries, just more fatigue and just getting back to their form and 100% healthy. You're going to see Luis Alberto and Savic back in the lineup. You'll have as close as a healthy squad that Inzaghi probably hasn't seen since last February. So I do believe that they'll win the game. Cagliari did look okay in their season opener against Sassuolo. I just think that their midfield is a big concern with Nainggolan not there. And I don't know, there's something that spark that's not there. The defense is not bad. I just think that, with Lazio's midfield, it's going to be more difficult. And with Ciro Immobile up front and you got Cherby, I do think that they're going to take the 3 points. And I'll even add to the Genoa versus Napoli. Genoa is going to come back to life. They're going to realize that these guys are in a whole different ballpark. They're at the bottom of the club, bottom of the table for a reason, like near the bottom. I think Napoli is really going to take the game to them. And if Osimhen starts on Sunday, Crotone really picked apart Genoa's defense at points in the match where they came close to even scoring a second or third goal. And with a team like Napoli, who I thought as the game progressed against Parma got better, and there were a lot of missed passes, missed chances, like the little things that you're going to normally see in a season opener where you haven't played for a couple of weeks. And I know they just recently stopped the season, maybe a month ago, but I think you're going to see a much more refined Napoli this Sunday. And then you have Inter, and I think Inter is going to mop Fiorentina because Fiorentina cannot score goals. They don't have a number nine who can provide them more than 10 goals in a season. I don't remember the last time they've had somebody who can, where they've scored 16 goals in a game, in a season. So I think scoring is going to be their biggest downfall. They create so many chances in a game, but they can't find the back of the net. They showed it on Saturday in their against Torino, even though they won, was it 1-0?
Yeah, 1-0.
It was only 1-0. It wasn't like they were dominant and they were so close to scoring three or four more goals. And I think that's going to be their downfall, is that they don't have that clinical score up front, and it may come back to haunt them.
Yeah, and I would agree on that. Inter is going to be hosting Fiorentina for their season debut on Saturday. I think it's going to be a relatively routine Inter victory. You know, Fiorentina, I did watch them beat Torino, and ironically enough, one of Fiorentina's most dangerous players in that match was a guy who spent this past season with Inter in Biragi, who's back from loan with Inter, back on Fiorentina. You know, he created some chances from the left wing back spot. He was pretty lively. And throughout that game, I was, you know, poking a little fun at Chiesa for being pretty ineffective right up until he assisted the game-winning goal in the 78th minute. So minutes after I tweeted about Chiesa being underwhelming again, he did actually step forward and make a big play. But I do expect Inter to win the opener. Made official over the weekend, I should say, was Arturo Vidal has officially arrived at Inter. Conte finally got his man. Of course, Vidal, you know, hasn't really trained with Inter yet, missed the entire preseason. He will be available to play, I would imagine. I don't necessarily expect him to start. You know, Inter has plenty of bodies in the midfield. I think we'll probably see Vidal come on eventually if he's not in the starting 11. But the debut that I'm most excited for, you know, Joe referenced preseason earlier, and Ashraf Hakimi has had a sensational preseason for Inter. You take it with a grain of salt because you're going up against, you know, City, Achi-caliber sides. Like Hakimi had an unbelievable performance against Pisa, for what that is worth. But I've watched him throughout the preseason, and not only does he have the football IQ and is very accurate with his passes and crosses, but the speed. Oh, I think that's what's going to stand out throughout the year from Hakimi. Is he's going to be a nightmare matchup for opposing left backs with him at that right wing back position, because keeping up with his pace is going to be virtually impossible. So Hakimi, so far, preseason, again, grain of salt, but he's looked fantastic. Lautaro Martinez is scoring goals for fun in preseason. He looks like he may have put some of that mental block that he had late last season with all the Barcelona rumors. Seems like he's put that behind him. He's focused more on Inter. You know, I expect Romelu Lukaku to have a big year. So, you know, again, even though I picked Juventus as my Scudetto winner, I think Inter is going to make it close and make it interesting. We'll probably start that off with a victory over Fiorentina. So I guess we're all in good moods, as we've all predicted Napoli, and I agree on that, Lazio and Inter wins at the weekend. So with that said, we'll get this episode to a close. Huge thank you to Joe Fischetti from the Forza Napoli pod for joining us. And you guys need to listen to his pod. Even if you're not a Napoli supporter, he does a fantastic job. I listen to Joe all the time. He's really got a strong sense for the game. And, you know, you can scout out Napoli and their opponents by listening to the Forza Napoli pod, wherever you find your pods. And Joe, where do they find you on social media?
Yeah, thanks for that. And again, thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure chatting with you guys. You can find me at Joe_Fischetti5 on Twitter. And like you mentioned, at Forza Napoli Pod on Twitter and now on Instagram as well.
Yeah, really good stuff. And make sure you follow Jerry at JMancini8. Make sure you follow me at Alex Dono. And make sure you follow the show at CalcioCon Pod. And wherever you listen to us, whatever platform you listen on, it's a huge help if you leave us a 5-star rating. It literally takes a second just to hit 5 stars, and then you go on with the rest of your day. If you want to take 30 seconds, you can leave us a nice review as well. We really appreciate the support. We'll be, you know, bringing you as much content as possible during the season. So happy to review the matches from this past weekend. We'll probably have more later this week by the way of previews. In fact, we're planning an episode with the guys from Low Limit Football within the next couple of days. So you'll hear a lot more content this week on the Calcio Connection podcast. Ciao.